Welcome to the very last show of the year. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. This is, it's been an intense year, this 2012, hasn't it? Those Mayans, last year I made fun of the Mayans. This year, not so much. Now I'm like, hey, whatever Mayans, just please go easy on Johnny and the gang. Okay, so I wanna say that this year has been great for the podcast. We've gotten tons more listeners. There's a lot more you out there, a lot more guests, a lot of cool guests. Had a lot of people on here that really turned a lot of other people onto the show. So I wanna thank everyone, all the new listeners, all the old listeners, all the Europe listeners, all the Asia listeners in South America. We got them coming from everywhere. Haven't seen any Africans. But maybe this year we'll get some. Anyway, I went to Christmas. Last you heard, I was on my way out the door to Christmas, and I went and I spent time with my family. It was great. I had asked my grandma and my aunts, because I saw one of my cousins get a gift where it was my grandma telling them they loved them. And when you squeeze, she'd say it into a teddy bear, and then it's recorded on this teddy bear forever. So I asked for them. So I'm going to play you a little bit of my grandma and her teddy bear. I'm squeezing. So that was her contribution. She's saying, I love you, John Charles, which is, she calls me John Charles. So anyway, that's my Avita. So I got some of those guys for Christmas, had a great time with the family. I had a lot to drink, took a scooter, my aunt's scooter, to the store. She has like a little rascal, and so she was chilling out, and people were a little too drunk to drive, so I decided that I didn't really want to walk, so I took that scooter to 7-Eleven and ran the errands needed, came back, everyone was happy and safe. I was told by some gang dudes that I needed some speakers. So overall, Christmas was great. Family, fantastic to see them all. You know, the grandparents are getting a little older. You feel that when you're there, and that makes it, that you know, lays a little melancholy on the Christmas, but also makes you want to celebrate just that much more. So everyone had a great time. There's babies there. My cousin Christopher's going to have another baby, him and his wife Wesley. Congratulations. I don't think they listen to this podcast. I'll be honest. I don't think they do. I don't hold it against them. I just don't think they listen to it. Anyway, thank you so much for the great year that you've given me. And listening to my problems when I've come on here with my problems, and inviting me to pool parties when I came on here and said I wanted to go to pool parties, and then afternoon stuff, and in the fall, like football games, which I couldn't hang on to. I tried. And so now my Sundays have been lonely. So let's find a new activity for 2013, and I'm going to keep on bringing you some great shows, a lot of great guests, and a lot of greatness. Let's do this, right? 2013. We're going to get down.
How did I get here? Lying in the sunshine.
All right, so my guest today has gone through some changes, much like the year 2012. Her name is Brandi Zidane. She's a multi-instrumentalist and a singer-songwriter. And I saw her play a few weeks ago at Monkey Nest, at my friend Todd's show with Sally Allen and Buck Allen. It was great. And Brandi was fantastic, and I saw her in a new light. I got to hear her sing, which I'd never really heard her sing except harmonies and stuff, and just got to see her kind of interact with musicians when she didn't really know the song, which really, you know, makes someone blow up in your eyes. You're like, wow, that person's a real cat, real jammer. So that's what I thought. I thought, man, Brandi is a great, great musician. So anyway, I tracked her down, and I caught her, and found out that she was making a record with a very good friend of mine, George Reef, who I've been in negotiations with to get on this show we need to negotiate further. This will happen. Anyway, she made a record with him. It's going to come out in like March, but she came here before she left to her Christmas holiday in Canada, which is where she's from. And you'll find out some stuff. She's even been nominated for a couple of Junos. Look at that. Here, let's do this. Last show of the year. My friend, Brandy Zidane.
Don't bury me underground in a wooden box that falls around. Leave my bones bare and I will become a river.
That's Twilight Hotel. Is that what that is?
It is Twilight Hotel. You got it.
So I thought you were freezing me out. Like, I'm not going to talk to you the whole interview. tell me about that band. Now, that was your band in Canada? And
it,
you guys
it was.
Were actually nominated for Juno Awards?
Yeah. The last two records we put out were nominated for Juno Awards. It was a pretty exciting thing because that's kind of the highest recognition you can get in my homeland.
Yeah.
And and we were a band for almost 10 years, a duo. We toured all over Europe and Canada and some of the States as well. It was a good run.
Wow. Were you, how famous were you there? Did you, you went to the Juno Awards? Did you sit like next to Alanis Morissette? What's,
no, what was we, the... nobody knew who the heck we were.
No.
No. We were, you know, nominated in the Roots category.
Okay.
So.
They might not have even shown that one on TV.
No, they did not show that one on TV. No. Probably like the Americana Grammys.
Is that the thing?
Yeah.
No, I thought there was the Americana Awards. There's Americana Grammys?
There is a category, yeah, Americana.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, I can believe it.
It's kind of like the pop music of the 60s and 70s, really, it seems like.
Yeah, that's what it should be, almost like a retro kind of music. Mm-hmm. Do you consider what you do country-based music? Or roots music or Americana music.
Yeah.
Like not quite country,
sure.
Not quite rock.
Sure. It is all of those things. It is all of those things. I think with that band, we did have that sound. In my solo efforts these days, it is moving further away from that to more of a more accessible, even slightly pop sound at times. More tighter songs, tighter production. So...
Were you,
if that makes
before,
sense to you.
When I saw you play the other night, now it was the first time I've ever actually gotten to sit there and watch you kind of do your thing. And it was, I mean, it's amazing when somebody does a song by themselves on a lap steel. Like to me that.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That
I forgot I did that.
That would drive me crazy. I wouldn't be able to do that. I'd freak out. I'd psych myself out. You know, I'd go into the tunnel of love.
Well, I do go in the tunnel of love.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is why I do that, because the steel guitar is my favorite thing in the world. Other than singing, that's my second favorite thing. And I'm kind of getting obsessed with it in an unhealthy way, as steel players do. And I love, you know, I'm a big fan of Daniel Lanois. And
that's what I was going to ask you.
You know, his work with the steel guitar.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm drawing my influence from.
That's not in a bad way, but that's what I was reminded of when I saw you play. Like, I thought it was very... There was the ability to play and you use effects to kind of accentuate what you're doing and to create, like, a dream atmosphere as opposed to, I don't really know what I'm doing, so I'll put a bunch of delay on it and it'll kind of wobbly.
Yeah, but...
But you really can play. Yeah,
create a soundscape.
Yeah, an atmosphere.
An atmosphere, yeah. And know that you can just... play the right notes and you don't have to play a ton. And that's kind of how I approach all of my playing, even with the Trishas too.
Yeah, because you're also a side person, not just a front person.
I am.
I saw you, that was the other thing, was that I was very blown away by your ability to hang. Did you know Sally Allen's songs that you were playing? That's what I thought. And what you did was so tasteful. And by the middle of the song, you were singing harmonies and you were doing that thing that Kristen Wiig and Fred Armisen did on Saturday Night Live, where, have you ever seen it, where they pretend they're these songwriters and that they wrote this song, and then one of them just starts making up a song and the other one sings along with them but has to watch their mouth. I was noticing you were doing that, and you were really good at it.
Oh,
like, I was just
kind
of blown around by your all-around musicianship and just general badassness.
Oh, well,
I
appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a great time. I always... You know, I've been observing people my whole life do that sort of thing, and finally it's kind of come around where I think I have enough skill to be able to kind of tastefully,
you definitely,
you know,
do
back up someone.
Yeah.
And you know, with the Trishas though, it's more of here are the songs and here are the parts that are already on the record, and it's kind of like, how do I serve this song the best? With what instrument am I going to, you know, what instrument am I going to pick?
And what instruments do you choose from in the Trishas?
In the Trishas, I choose from accordion, lap steel, or electric guitar.
Okay.
And it's been so exciting to just kind of, you know, because their record has all sorts of things on it.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful record, High, Wide, and Handsome. And I've been kind of trying to mimic these pro Nashville players, you know, like a pro Nashville pedal steel player.
Yeah.
I'm trying to mimic him on, you know, a C6 lap steel. And it's been really, really fun. And I've worked my butt off all year to try to make it sound as good as the record sounds for them.
That's great. That's great that you put so much into it, because that's usually another quality that's kind of, there's a, by the, you know, there's there have been people that I've played with that I've actually hired to play with me that have served the gig by the amount of money that they're getting.
Sure. Yeah, that's never,
and you
the
seem
right
like a person that is, if someone asks you to do something, they're going to get 100% of Brandy, no matter what the deal is. If you're going to get in it, you're going to give your all.
Definitely. Definitely. And you know, I'll be honest, when they asked me to be a side woman for them, you know, I had been playing with Twilight Hotel for almost 10 years, and I had done a lot of lead work in that band, and I had led the band. And but this was a whole different ball game, and I was thinking, how am I going to be able to do this for 30 songs, 30 odd songs, you know, play these parts and serve these songs? But I just kind of put that thought aside and said, I'll make it work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you just have to put the time into it. And I think being a female player as well, like, you really have that pressure where you don't want to get on stage and look like a fool. Because
talk to me about that.
Because half the people already think you might be a fool because you're a woman up there playing. And they may be second guessing you just because, you know, it's a man's world.
Yep.
So yeah.
So you better do what I say. No, I'm not, you know, I was noticing that the other day, and I did think about it when I left. And today, you know, when I was thinking about when I was practicing for the interview, I was wondering how often a compliment paid to you by a man is ended with "for a girl."
Well, that's starting to be more rare.
Okay, good. Because that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Here, I know enough people that play their asses off. And I had a band, I think before I met you, I had a band of women.
Oh,
and
really?
Me.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. And they could all play. You don't have to tell anybody. I mean, that's the kind of, I mean, there's, that's the thing, is that a lot of women are in the front.
Sure.
You know
true.
What I mean?
It's true.
And that's, I don't know. But to me, it wasn't, it didn't have anything to do with you being a girl. When I liked what you were doing, you played the way that I like people to play guitar.
Well, I think also, honestly, the female musicians that I know and love, that I look up to, like Cindy Kasdaler, of course.
Yeah.
And someone like Jen Kondos, who plays bass for Ray LaMontagne.
Right.
You know, there's a certain approach that a woman has, and you, especially women that are a little more mature than I am, you know, in age, and they're really kind of completely comfortable with who they are, and they're, and like I said, serving the song and not playing for any other reason but that. And it's it comes across being extremely tasteful, and that's kind of what I've taken from these women and what I strive to be.
That's,
you know,
what you put off.
Well, good.
Totally.
Oh, good.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm doing the right things then.
Like, to me, you're almost like a Gerf Morlix.
Ooh, that's a very
person.
Big compliment.
You know
right
what I
there.
Mean?
Thank you.
A younger Gerf Morlix.
Wow. Thank you.
I was going to say cuter, but I really think Gerf is cute.
He is pretty cute. He's got cute. That long flowing
yeah,
hair.
Yeah. So let's go back. You're from Canada. Canadian.
That's true. Yes.
The homeland.
The homeland.
Where you were born there?
Born and raised in Winnipeg. Yeah, I like to call it the incubator because it's this, you know, it's a small town, but, you know, it's a big town, 700,000 people, but there's no big city around it that has any influence on Winnipeg, you know? So it's this little incubator in the winter, and it's on the cold prairie. Like, when you fly into the town, it's just these buildings standing up in the middle of this flatland, and you think, what? This is crazy, you know? And I go out to my parents' farm, and I can see all the buildings, you know, from 20 miles away. And it's so
interesting. Were you raised on a farm?
I wasn't raised on a farm, but all of my family are farmers. My parents moved into the city to raise me, and they're now back out on the farm. But there is a certain...
Why didn't they want to raise you on the farm?
They took jobs in the city for a while.
Doing what? Are you an only child?
I am not an only child. Okay. I have two very, very older brothers. I was a bit of a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. They did some jobs in the city, but all of my family are hard farmers and
it's a kind of people.
It really is a kind of people. And as I'm speaking, I'm trying to find words to describe it, but all I can say is that there's this certain work ethic that's involved in it that I think was passed on to me in what I do now.
Yeah.
You know, because there wasn't any musicians or art or creative things going on in my family at all.
Right.
I somehow just got that gene. But there's something about working the land in Canada. I mean, my God, I can't even imagine what my grandparents went through, you know.
It's cold.
It's cold. And they didn't even have electricity for a while, too, you know. It's insane.
Wow.
So
what were they doing? What were your parents doing? They moved into the city to raise you.
Yeah,
they took jobs. What kind of jobs?
My dad is a communications technician for a long time, and my mom just worked odd jobs. But now that they're back on the farm, they're so happy.
What kind of farm?
My dad he hay farms. Oh. He makes very high quality alfalfa hay for racehorses.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you guys go, is there a lot of racehorsing up there?
There is a bit of horse racing. And my dad would take me to the track when I was a kid. And we'd go there. And yeah, lots of cattle farmers in my family too. Lots of everything.
Yeah. So how did you get interested in music? What was that?
That's a good question, you know, because...
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I worked on that one all day. I was crafting it.
You know, I feel like when I get asked that question and when I've thought about that before, it's something that I've just always done. And it feels like I've always been doing it. And there was never this time where it was like, oh, here's music. Now you can feel connected to that and do it. Just always was. So... I think I just found it, or it was already in me. I don't know. Does that make sense to you at all?
Yeah, was there music like in your house? Were your parents
No.
Well, I know Richie's got a new album.
No, they weren't like that at all. They played some 90s country music, you know. But I did find their Beatles record collection when I was 11, you know, and got into that and started playing that on my own. But it wasn't like, hey, Brandy, listen to this. This is cool.
Right.
It just kind of happened, and I started singing, and then I took lessons, and then it was just all
so there,
all
there
about
wasn't
it,
like
my whole
a,
life.
There wasn't like a tipping point moment where you were like, oh, I just heard that song, and
no,
now I'm going to be that person.
There wasn't that. I just kind of always knew that was what I wanted to do, even when I can remember back being in kindergarten, of all things, of
wow.
all times.
So then you started singing, and you probably sang well.
I guess so.
People
yeah,
encouraged
and then
you?
And then, you know, people enabled me and they said you should do this and do that.
What was
and,
the first instrument?
Piano was my first instrument.
Did you ask for it? I mean, did you say, hey, I want to learn piano?
Well, not exactly. I was told that I should take voice lessons since somebody saw talent in me. I think it was a music teacher in school. And then that happened, and they said, well, if you're going to take voice lessons, you should take piano, and then theory, kind of all just spent my teenage years practicing and playing so much.
You play like somebody that might not have had much of a social life in their teen years.
Oh, I made up. Oh, yeah, I had time for that.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah,
I have this friend Billy that plays really well. You know Billy White, he was playing with Alejandro Escovedo when his album came out?
Oh, nice.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
He's a flamenco guy now.
Right.
He went back to Mexico, but he and I used to have these conversations, and I would always be like, God, I'm just not as good as you. And I, you know, it's like, well, man, if you go back, I bet you had a really good time in high school and all these friends and stuff. And I sat in my room playing, listening to Randy Rhoads.
Right. Well, it's that whole 10,000 hour thing, right?
Yeah,
have you heard
it
about
is.
That?
Yeah,
you know?
I've heard about it.
Yeah.
I think I've experienced it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's... definitely works.
Yeah.
I managed to still have a very interesting outgoing social life in
good.
High school, though. I got it all over with, in fact.
Now you have no social life at
all. Yeah, actually, I don't.
Me neither. That's good. It's important.
Spend my time on the road or I'm home in my house playing steel guitar. It's ridiculous.
Are you friends with Ricky? Did I see a picture of you and Ricky?
Ricky Ray Jackson?
Of course.
Yeah, he played pedal steel on my record.
He did? You had another guy come in?
Well, in fact...
He played on my record.
Fantastic. He's great. I heard him on the Two Willy Phosphorescent record and thought that his playing was very...
ethereal.
Yeah, great word for
That's
it.
Yeah.
Just not the norm for steel guitar.
Yeah.
And when George Reef and I were doing pre-production for the record... we thought, how cool would it be to have Ricky come in and I play lap steel and he plays pedal steel and we back up this one track and do a duet. So that's what we did. And it was really fun. We figured out parts that went together well. And then, with two intonated instruments, it could be a disaster, but it wasn't. It was great.
No, he's got such good taste.
He does.
You know, I saw that happen too. I remember when he got the pedal steel, he was like, oh, I'm going to learn how to do this. And I was like, oh, God. I was like listening to someone learn how to play violin or something. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, it is weird. That is a weird instrument.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, in the last few weeks, I've made it my New Year's resolution to take lessons on pedal steel.
Wow.
So I'm gonna get one and learn how to do that.
Well, I don't know what he did, man, but that guy like showed up a few months later and
he worked.
I think
he
didn't leave his house.
I think that's what happened. Yeah, and I think he got some lessons from some good guys.
Yeah.
And
look at him now. He's out there with Alejandro Escovedo.
I know. That's all you gotta do. Just hole up.
Yeah.
Advice to all the young folks out there.
He's a great player.
Yeah.
So what did you do? Did you have bands in high school? Did you do that kind of thing?
Tons.
What did you do?
Tons, you
any
know.
Any good names? What kind
no,
of music?
No, actually, oh, you mean bands. No, I never had any bands of my own. But I was just, I played my first solo show on my own when I was 15, of my own songs.
Wow.
And was kind of doing that throughout high school. And I was in, you know, concert band and jazz band and all that stuff.
What did you play in those? Piano or
no, I actually band? Played, I played saxophone and flute.
So you were like a monster.
Well,
do you keep saxophone?
I don't keep those around. No, they were very much high school instruments. But if I put time into it, I'm sure I could play them again. But they were fun, and I think I just learned so much about music throughout those years, just dabbling in all these different things. And I was in musical theater and studying classical as well. Like that, I spent so much time.
You just soaked it all up.
I did. I really did. I did.
I wish I was you.
And I still had time to like go out with boyfriends and.
What is wrong with you?
You know, be silly. I don't know. I figure that I've kind of been. People have asked a question lately, like, well, how do I, you know, just young people want advice on if they should be a musician or not. And I honestly tell people that if there's anything else they can do. And they want to do, they should do it. Because I almost feel like doing what we do, it can't be a choice.
No.
It just has to be
You gotta. I just was talking to a friend of mine that's working with a band, and they come across a really great opportunity. And one of the guys is like, very, very small reason, like, oh, if we can't do this part of it, then I don't want to do it. And she was like, what should I do? And I was like, I think you should go rent this movie of U2 called From the Sky Down. And I could hear her like about to go like, okay, get off the fucking phone, because I don't want to hear another word you say. Go watch a movie. But the thing is that there's a thing that happens that it's bigger than you. It's
exactly.
Bigger than your life. It's bigger than the way that you live. You don't care about anything. You'll sleep on floors. You won't have stuff except stuff to record with. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a 35-inch TV, but I've got a fucking Baldwin organ.
Exactly. Exactly. That's,
you know what
that's
I mean?
How it is. And I live in a shack of a house
exactly.
on the east side, you know.
But and so that's what you tell them?
I tell them if there's anything else that you want to do you should do it.
Can I share a story with you?
Please.
I think the listeners might like it. When I was a kid, my mom took me along to concerts and all this kind of stuff. Then once I got into music, she had very good friends who I just played a benefit they put on the other day for somebody. This couple named Scott and Brenda Mitchell, and they own this place called the Spring Cafe. / Wunschy Brothers Cafe and Saloon, but it's a place where like Lyle was playing in the early 90s, or not in the early 90s, in the 80s,
right.
And this was a long time ago, this was in the 80s, and they would have all kinds of people, and Townes Van Zandt mm-hmm. played there, and we went to go see him, and obviously we would go and hang out with everyone after the thing, and I want to say I was probably 14, and set the scene. Maybe I was wearing parachute pants and a sleeveless shirt. And I went up to Townes Van Zandt. I remember being really moved by his whole thing. And I could kind of tell that he was this guy that was not, there wasn't a home, that he was just out there doing this thing like gypsy style. And that was just like fucking, you know, here I was, you know, living in the suburbs. So anyway, sorry, this thing isn't about me. But anyway, so I decided at one point to go ask him, you know, at this kind of after party thing, like, hey, well, what do I do? And so when I did, I remember his breath was really strong of booze, and he was kind of, I could tell he was drunk, and he was, raised his voice, and he was like, this is shit, you know, you get nothing, and people rob you, and you fucking never remember. And I remember my mom coming up to him and grabbing, going like, Townes, he's just a kid. He's just a kid. Like,
oh, wow.
You're freaking him out. He freaked me out. But the thing is he was right. He was just telling it to me in a very ugly way.
Right, it's true, he was right.
Yeah.
But that's probably not what you wanted to hear, or at the time.
No, I was 14.
No,
I wanted to be a lot like Loverboy. I did. I wanted a headband and leather pants. So so you make this choice, you go to live this thing in high school. Did you go to college after high school? What happens there in Canada?
No,
were you like, I'm doing this?
Yeah,
college isn't going to make a difference.
College isn't going to make
a difference.
Take my time. Exactly. I knew that even if I went there to study music, it wasn't really going to be, you know, it wasn't going to help me do, you know, help me write songs and go on the road. So I ended up meeting Dave, the other half of Twilight Hotel, when I was 19, soon after I graduated high school. And then
did you have a plan?
Did I have a plan?
When you finish high school and your parents, were they like, hey, so Brandy, what's going on here?
They,
you're going to work on the farm? You're going to work in the city?
They knew that I was going to do it.
Okay.
I had made I took my little like music scholarship that I got when I graduated high school and made a little EP.
And oh, so they gave you?
There's, you know, music, you know, extracurricular awards
things.
That's
real cool.
You know.
You got money?
Yeah, I got a little bit of money. I think it was like $500 or something, you know, and I just said, okay, I'm going to go make a little EP, and then I started sending it around to people, and ended up actually making a record when I was 19, just a live record, and started really doing it. And then I met Dave, and then even more so, you know, we became a duo, and then went on the road. So it's kind of all I've known, really, and I knew that college wasn't going to do any good for me.
Yeah,
I might go when I'm older just to learn.
Yeah,
you know. But
yeah. So then you guys started Twilight Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And
we did.
And what? How did? Tell me how that just kind of like started going. Did you guys started touring, or did you make a record, or what?
Yeah,
happened?
we actually it's a really nice story. You know, we met over a campfire in the forest of Ontario at this festival, and fell in love with each other, and then fell in love musically as well, and started writing, and knew that we had something very special.
Right. I'm still listening. Sorry. I think you're cold.
Oh, I'm actually not.
Oh. Yeah, you're Canadian. Sorry. So you fell in love. You're making music, you're writing songs.
Yeah, and then we just started hitting the road. And when you start hitting the road in Canada, you know, your first gig is 8 hours away.
Yeah,
tell me about that. Saskatoon, you know, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, playing a, you know, some sort of ice cream shop in the evening at 8 p.m. And you know, you just kind of take what you can get.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like, you know, there's a real good high quality of music that comes out of Canada. And I think it's because when you first start hitting the road in Canada, you really find out if you want to do it or not. You know, it weeds out certain kinds of people that
are weaklings.
It does, you know, and then the people that keep at it really end up becoming great because you're just out there and it's very tough. You don't make a lot of money up there. You can only tour a few times a year, you know.
Yeah, you can't really winter tour, can you?
Oh, yeah, you do. Freezing. We all do. We all do it.
I don't know how you do it.
It's very dangerous, and it's, I don't even know how I did it.
You did it, and you were kind of a kid.
Yeah, I kind of was a kid.
Was it just you and Dave?
It was just the two of us, yeah, just the two of us.
What's he doing now? Where's Dave?
He's actually on a cruise ship playing guitar in a jazz band.
How does he like that? Because, you know, there was a fantasy in this band Skyrocket I'm in where we're always trying to work in a vacation and play.
Oh.
Like, we worked out some shit to go skiing to that thing that they have in Steamboat.
Yes.
But we didn't play, like, the concert. What we would do is play, like, the late afternoon jam at the bottom of the ski thing.
Very smart.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's where the party goes. But then people got to ski and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, does he like it?
But I'm not sure. I think it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and people say it's not a cruise for you when you work on the cruise ship. Like, you think it would be, like, you just go up and jam from 6 to 9 or something.
I think you get to see a lot of the world, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work. And I think it's probably pretty isolating at times.
Is it up there in Canada? And
no, it's down in South America.
Oh, I bet he's loving it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine going from, like, Canada to the
Can't wait
warmth.
To hear what he... What do you think?
So you guys are still buds?
There was of course.
Did you guys stay a couple through the whole band?
Almost. Yeah.
And then once you broke up and you stayed a band?
Yeah, we did.
How was that?
We did for probably a year and a half-ish. Yeah, we had some, you know, we made a record called When the Wolves Go Blind, and that was our last record. And, you know, it got nominated for the Juno, and we're like, man, we got to tour it. We had obligations in Europe, people wanting us to go there.
So you were doing that?
We were, too. So, you know, we had to do it, and we did. So,
but was it weird? That's the question. I mean, you can say.
I don't know if I should
say. You don't have to say that. I mean, you can or you can't. But, I mean, there's a level of dysfunction that happens when a couple plays together that I can only imagine increases tenfold
when they break
up.
Yeah, I think that some good things just have to end.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say, you know. Yeah. And I think that it was great and you know, we just weren't finding that connection anymore, you know, musically and even writing wise, and I think like we're just kind of in different directions.
Yeah, that happens.
So, and he's, you know, playing around Austin in the Minor Mishap band, playing trumpet in that band.
Oh, he lives here?
He does live here. And you know, playing with that band and doing lots of cool things, you know, that I would never do and that we didn't do as a duo. But, you know, one of my main goals in moving to town, to Austin, was to broaden my horizons and to be a side woman and be a part of a lot of different projects, you know, and just kind of, just get out of the one thing. I think it's a hard thing to just do one project for so long. You know, it can drain you.
I think it's really gratifying, though, when you do. I think, and once again, that U2 movie. I just watched it the other day. That's why I'm like all like...
I'm going to have to watch that.
I'll lend it to you.
Okay, good.
Happily. Good. Because it really, it means more for a band. You know what I mean? Like, it works a little bit more in the context of, like, it's very hard to keep it together. Like, that song One.
Yeah.
That's the first breakthrough they had, where they were, like, breaking up, and they decided they had to go to Berlin. to like isolate themselves from all of the outside world that took them away from being U2. So in essence, they weren't totally giving everything they had. This wasn't the most important thing anymore. They had families. They had just become these super huge rock stars. They felt like they were kind of annoying because they were so, you know, it was when they were going to do Octoon Baby.
Okay.
And so they had a hard time, but they went somewhere and isolated themselves. And then, you know, obviously, you know how it is when you're trying to put together a record. You write one song and then you're like, okay, that's the, okay, now that's the first song. Now we can go. You know what I mean? You kind of start having a vision of what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And that song one, which lyrically is very beautiful, it's about these guys that can't do it without each other. And they have to carry each other throughout the good and the bad.
Yeah.
They have to be, I'm about to cry, seriously. That kind of shit.
He is about to cry.
That shit blows my mind.
Yeah.
Like, it totally blows my mind. I love that shit when people do that.
It's pretty special.
Because it's hard to do.
It is hard to do.
I mean, you know, you were, you know, even did you and Dave have more than you and Dave?
No, it was really just the two of us. And, you know, we had people we worked with in bands. But I think, you know, the thing about our group was that we never really got a break in that 10 years, you know, even in
the Juno Awards.
When you, well, this is just it. I'll explain it.
Oh, like, sorry.
I would look at everybody else that would be on that roster of nominations, you know, like the four other bands. They all had managers, labels, agents, every piece of the team put together, you know, and all in place.
People lobbying for them to win it.
Yeah. And we had nothing. Yeah. Those two times, nobody ever came out of the woodwork and said, like, you know, hey, we really want to, you know, book you or do this or that. And even though we had the track record and had records that were nominated and all of that recognition, people were, you know, we didn't fit in a genre box very neatly. Mm-hmm. And that's risky for anybody in the business. So and it was easy for the people in Europe, of course, because they actually want you to be more weird over there. Yeah. You know, and
the style of Americana is accepted pretty easily over there.
Oh, extremely. Like, yeah. I'm almost at a point in my career where I don't even think I'm going to put much effort. Actually, I should not say this. I'm not going to say it out loud.
I have Europe people listening to this.
Well, yeah,
Scandinavian
but
people.
I was
going to
say
like
something bad about Canada, though, and I'm not going to do that.
Don't. Canada is a beautiful place.
It is.
So you get out of Canada. Why did you move to Austin?
Well,
why Austin? I mean, what was it? You were going to move. Were you going to move? Like, okay, I'm going to move to L.A., New York, or
yeah,
Boston?
Yeah, it was actually Austin. After that first it was after that first Juno nomination that our band got, and we were there at the awards, and we were thinking, like, man, we don't fit in, and we don't understand, we don't know anybody, nobody cares. We feel like we have something bigger to do in the world, so let's go and see what we can do or what our path is, and that's going to be somewhere in the States. And we had done a bunch of touring down here, lots of California, lots of Tennessee, and you know, Kentucky and Texas as well.
How did you like it? Where had you been to America much before that?
Well, I loved it. I always loved coming down here, and Memphis is one of my favorite cities, and that was kind of on the top of the list. But really? In terms of, actually, I call it a sister city to Winnipeg. In fact, it really is. Muddy river, racial tension, empty buildings, lots of that. The exact same kind of town, but Memphis wasn't the right place to move to. So we had been to Austin a few times, and we thought, well, let's just try it out. We have some friends there already. So, you know, see what happens.
Who did you have some rock friends here?
Actually, Bart Willis, the owner of Southside Tattoo.
Yes.
He was one of the first.
Was he the guy that tattooed your antlers?
That's right.
Now?
Yeah. He just tattooed an antler on my hand. Yep. Today, in fact.
Today,
a few hours ago.
Did it hurt?
It hurt more than any of the other ones, yeah. It was good, though. It was a good hurt.
That's what some people, like my ex-wife used to say that. She liked that about getting a tattoo. It was like a rush.
It is a bit of a rush, for sure.
I guess I'm not a pain guy, because when they do, you know, when I've had them, I've just been like, oh, seriously, come on, just stop. So.
Well, you know, women have a higher threshold for pain. So.
They do.
They do. That's what they say. Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not, but.
So when did you move to Austin? What year? How many years ago?
2000 and I think, you know, I don't even know anymore. 2009?
Meet you.
2010? Something like that.
But like around when I met you before, right before
I
met you?
I think it was a year before that, actually. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, honestly, the first few years, wasn't around much. I was touring. And that's kind of still the case, you know, now that I play with the Trishas. I'm kind of thinking about leaving soon. So I'm just getting that feeling again. I'm getting that...
Leaving Austin?
Yeah, I'm getting that feeling like, oh, you know, I think it's time to move on.
What do you think? You'd move
place.
To a new environment. I like that about you. You're so cool. I'm serious.
I wish I didn't feel that way, though, sometimes, you know? Like that feeling that you get, just, it's... I almost want it to stop. Like, let's just settle down. But
maybe that's not... It's not time for you yet.
I don't think it's time for me yet. I think there's a lot of things ahead in the next few years.
What towns attract you?
I think about Nashville, and I think about even Toronto. I think about L.A. as well. I think about all those places. That's like a big triangle.
Well, Canada's like a bunch of different places, right?
Canada is, yes,
yeah,
definitely.
There's like Toronto, there's a whole different thing going on than in Winnipeg.
Definitely.
Maybe even, no, Montreal is where it's French, right?
Also another different situation.
Totally different.
Yeah. And lovely. Such a, yeah, it's great.
I hear great things about Toronto.
It's a beautiful
Vancouver,
big city.
People
yeah.
like Vancouver. Where is Toronto? In the middle?
No, it's over on the east
side.
Yep.
How far away from the nearest big American city? And what city would that be?
Boston is very close by.
I like Boston.
Yeah. Yeah, you're pretty close to all those big centers over there. Yeah, I'm just getting that.
You don't want to move somewhere like Nashville?
Oh, yeah, that's probably top. That's
kind of...
probably top of my list for sure. Definitely.
It
you
just
know.
Seems like you would walk in and people would just give you a key.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
Here you
I
go,
would
Brandy.
Love that. I would love that. I always like to be around people that can kind of play circles around me.
Me too.
It's just kind of like, you know, I get all wide-eyed and like, how did you do that? What did you do? Show me.
Yeah.
And then you just learn. So I just want to, I feel like I want to change up my scenery. And, you know, I'm going to spend probably a good half a year to another year here and developing
working
my
this,
solo project. You
working
know?
This record. When does it come out?
It's going to come out probably March, I would think.
Okay.
February, March. Yes, it's going to be a very soft release in this part of the world. But we'll be out in Europe as a hard release in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got
hard
some
release.
People over there.
You got a label that's doing your thing?
There's going to be, there's some talks and some work, and I'm going to be touring over there in October and November of 2013.
Where's that going to, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be in the UK, Netherlands, Germany, Belgium. Yeah, it's already in the works.
I wish the show was big enough. They had a budget, and I said, well, can I just follow you and do like an interview every day with you for 10 minutes?
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to, well, maybe I'd schlep your gear.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of stuff.
I
you don't,
do
you
have
don't
a
just
lot
take
of stuff.
Your acoustic guitar to a gig. You got an amp and a
that's right.
thing and with pedal boards.
Pack
and
a seat even.
When you go out and do this, that's right. I saw your pack a seat. Now, as a keyboard player that plays out there in the world, I was a little jealous because all I use is a stool just like this. I have another one. I have two of these stools.
Well, the pack a seat is the perfect height
mm-hmm.
for the old steel guitar, the lap steel especially. So, yeah, it's you need to get one of those. You can
yeah.
pack all your stuff in there.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Does it fold up?
It does fold up.
I'm sorry. I do mean those questions, but then I just imagine someone driving down the road listening to this conversation going, like, what is wrong with that
like,
guy?
What are they talking about?
Well, musicians listen to this.
They do, yeah.
They do.
They do.
Do they tell you that? Because I just made that.
Well, I would imagine they do because you have interesting people on, you know?
I do.
So.
I've had Gerf Morlicks.
Oh, awesome.
He's so cool. He's one of those guys, after you hang out with him, you feel like you're a better person because you know him. You know what I mean? He's got that vibe.
You know, I recently saw him play. A good friend of mine, one of my favorite songwriters in Canada, his name is Scott Nolan, and he was just recently down here playing a tiny little house concert at Bart Willis's house, of course. And he was recently on tour with Mary Gauthier, as him and his drummer were her backup band. And so Scott was playing, and Gerf had produced one of his records. So Gerf came out to the show and sat in with Scott, and it was like going to school watching him play.
Yeah.
You know, he just put on whatever guitar was there and plugged into whatever amp was there, had no effects happening at all, and just made it work and got really cool tone and just made it happen, you know. And that's the right there. You know, that just shows, like, he's incredible. He doesn't need anything, any effects or any kind of situation, right. You know, his gear or anything. He just comes up and rocks.
I had this conversation with David Grissom about that, because in the early 90s, when I moved here, I lived in a recording studio. You know the Congress House down on South Congress? It's Mark Holman's studio.
Okay.
It's a nice cinema house, but cool. They had a room. They needed kind of someone to be around. So I did that. And sometimes I'd assist on sessions and, you know, set up mics and stuff. And I did that one day for Grissom, and Grissom was looking at the amps, and he just was like, oh, I'll just plug in this guitar to the basement. And he just plugged the guitar straight into this amp, and when he hit it, there it was. David Grissom was playing guitar. And I think that the tone is in the fingers.
Yeah, that's what they say.
I think that I was listening. I did an interview yesterday with this guy, Elias Haslinger, who's a jazz saxophone guy. And when I was listening to him play, I was like, wow, tone really is unique. Even on an instrument, someone can play, you and I can play the exact same. We can both play that red Telecaster. But what we play is going to be unique to who we are and how we play.
Definitely.
That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, it is.
Do you think you bring that? Do you think that when you play accordion, are you as accomplished on accordion as you are on?
No, not at all. I can do it, and I will, you know, practice parts and learn things.
Right.
But, you know, it's not where my heart is.
Yeah.
My heart's in the steel guitar for sure.
But you like accordion?
I like it just
You
fun.
Write on it or something? Or?
I have in the past written on it, yeah. Or I actually, you know, honestly, I find that writing without any instruments is the best thing for me. Without anything. And
talk
I just,
to me about that.
You know, because, you know, if you're there with your instrument, you just kind of, I end up kind of doing things that I already know, or I get into same kind of chord patterns and, you know, but whereas if I'm just in my head, the melody can go anywhere. There's no limitations.
Are you fucking Mozart or something? You just make shit up? Like, I need stuff around and recording things. The microphones are all lose everything.
Voice memo in the iPhone.
Voice memo, yeah.
Yeah, that's been amazing. There's probably hundreds and hundreds of little ideas in there.
I've handheld recorders. At almost anywhere you reach in this place, you can find something, because I'm so scared that I'm going to have this idea that's going to change my life.
Well,
but
yeah.
Do you lose them? Or do you sing into the voice recorder?
I don't lose them. There's times
you
where
Jay-Z or something. Sorry, I'm going to keep on finding references.
There are times where I will, if it's right before I'm going to sleep and something comes in my head, I'm like, oh man, I'm just about to fall asleep. I don't want to turn on the, you know, get it all happening. But I, you know, honestly, that's sometimes it's the best.
Yeah.
You got to just make yourself get out of bed and write down those ideas.
You know that song, you know the song, the famous story. Keith Richards woke up in the middle of the night and he slept with the tape recorder next to his bed, and he got up because he had an idea and he recorded it real fast. And we woke up the next morning, he saw that the tape had gone all the way to the end. And so he was like, that's weird. So he went to the very beginning and it was, and then like 30 minutes of him snoring.
Oh my God.
But he got up and did it.
I've never heard that story. That's fantastic.
There'd be no satisfaction. We'd live in a different world.
You never know. I've kind of been learning as I go along with songwriting, you know, that it is a craft and you have to work at it every day, you know, and some, you know, whereas when I was in my early 20s, I would just kind of write when I had inspiration, but you just have to seek it out. I find it everywhere. It's not just love and emotion. It's in nature, you know, it's in my spirituality. It's in all that sort of stuff.
Just
observing people,
right.
You know, all of that. You can find it. You can just walk out your door and find it. You just have to be open to it. You have to be in a mind space to see it. So that's kind of how I'm living my daily life now. Since I, you know, get to just, I mean, I'm so grateful every day. I just get to play music and work on my art. Wake up and set up my instruments or do some leather work or something. You know, it's a good life.
Some leather work.
It's true. Don't laugh. It's a,
I know. It's my. It's a weird thing to throw in.
I know, but that's also something that makes me very happy. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you're cool.
Thank you.
Seriously.
Thank
I know
you.
It's Walter Cronkite probably never said that to anyone while he's in the middle of an interview, but you are. It's nice to get to sit down and really talk to you. So let's talk about this record. So did you have songs?
Yeah.
And then what happened? George saw you. How did you hook up with? And explain George. Let's explain, because George has gotten a lot of love on shows. on mm-hmm. a lot of these shows.
Good.
You bring him up, people love him, they just go crazy about him. I know some people that he's produced. He produced a record that I listen to all the time by one of my friends, Sheboygan. And he's been around for a long time in the music scene.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him since like 89.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I saw him play, and he was at Whole Foods the next day where I worked, and I fucking freaked out on him. I chased him down the aisle. Seriously. It's like, I saw you play last night. Your band is Big Loud Dog. It's the coolest band. It was like a Big Star kind of band.
Oh, nice.
Trio. Anyway, wow. So explain George.
Yeah, well, I met George through Ray Wiley Hubbard. I was doing a little extra side gig in their office with Judy Hubbard.
Yeah, she's cool.
For a little while, yeah. And
oh, you were working with them?
I was.
That's cool. I bet you got to learn a lot of stuff.
It's the same
genre of music. You'd be playing the same places. And, okay,
definitely.
Sorry, go ahead.
Definitely learned a ton. And also, you know, was able to use my skills in the business to help with certain aspects of their operation. And so I met George through Ray. George was playing bass for Ray. And he also has co-produced the last few records, and just kind of ended up, you know, hanging out with George and talking about music and realizing that we really had a similar idea of what sounded good, and I began to really trust his ideas and his ears. I trust his ears, you know. And that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
When you choose someone to work with.
Yeah.
So you know, I kind of was thinking about making a... I had something happen in the last half a year that kind of shook my whole life, and a path that was laid out for me ended up not happening, and I just kind of got this...
That's
all I'm going to really say about
okay.
it, but...
You're very mysterious as well, by the way.
Well, yes, okay. Well, now you're going to make me blush or something. I'm losing my train of thought.
Something happened which changed your path.
It changed my path, and also, thank you for getting me back on track, and kind of lit a fire inside of me to realize, like, oh yeah, why am I not making a record and doing the solo thing? Like, what am I waiting for here? You know, I was on the road in all of 2012 with the Trishas, and as much as that is fulfilling... It doesn't fulfill every part of me,
right?
Of course,
you're also a creative,
and I'm a
songwriter.
Front woman.
Yeah,
yeah,
front woman.
Yeah, and so I kind of just realized, like, hey, I was writing all these songs because of this event that happened, and I thought I'd already had a whole record written, but really I didn't at all, and I, in the last 6 months, have written this record, and it's been. And I think it's some of the best songs that I've ever written.
Did you play anything the other night that I know?
No, actually. Okay. No, I didn't. And I'm kind of keeping them close.
I see that.
You know?
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I've been trying to write songs that are, you know, under 3 minutes and 30 seconds, you know, and just kind of giving myself little goals.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been an extreme, huge time of personal growth, like the most I've ever had in my whole life. And maybe it's that whole Saturn return situation, you know, in your late 20s, but that's what it is. And it's been, and I've learned so much about myself through making this record too. George, you know, I went to George because he was really the one guy I just wanted to work with. And I knew that the two of us could get together. And it was kind of just us the whole time, except when Ricky Ray came in. And
so what's the instrumentation on the record?
The instrumentation is a lot
drums
of guitars
and stuff.
It's a lot of guitars. I'm playing some drums that are very stripped down.
Yeah.
There's even some synths, and there's going to be some Wurlitzer, like, and then lap steel and lots of layered vocals. But the thing about, you always know someone is a good producer when they take you out of your comfort zone and they get something out of you that you've never even experienced before on your own as an artist or whatever, with whatever instrument you're playing. So there was a certain song that George was not sure about to start with for that going on the record. And when it came time to do it, you know, I was sitting there playing this song. It's one of the most honest songs I've written. I don't usually write, you know, in first person, but I did in this occasion. And it's extremely, I'm, you know, just letting it all out basically in this song. And you know, he put this really nice Gibson in my hand, and we, it was late at night, and started playing the song. He's like, nope, that's not going to work. It sounds too good. And then he ended up putting this plywood Framus in my hand, and it just sounded all woody and cool. And then he, you know, somehow was able to get this completely unaffected, vulnerable performance from me. And I sang in a way I've never sung before. And it was moving to both of us, you know, because when you're a musician and you've been playing for so long, there's just all these things you do and you become used to. And it's like, oh, I'm a good singer, so I'm going to slide up to this note and do all this with my vibrato. Yeah. But really, he was able to get me to sing to, like I said, all coming back around to just serve the song that I had written. And what that song needed was a completely honest, really raw and almost childlike delivery. And at one point in time, he said, it's like someone else entered the room and went into your body and started singing. And that's how I felt when I was tracking at that time, you know, and we all got emotional, and it was great.
That's,
you know,
making
it was
me emotional.
It was very special. It was and it really,
the best thing we could do right now is like have the song come up in the background.
I know.
No, I know. It'll come on someday. I'll play it.
Someday.
What?
So it was a very, very special tracking, recording, you know, time. And that song ended up, it's going to be the title track to the record. And I'm very, very excited to let it out into the world at some point.
I'm really excited. I'm excited. I'm excited. I mean, I am. I want to hear this.
Cool. I'm glad. I hope everybody does. There's been a nice group of people that have supported and pre-ordered the record, and it's been really nice to see them come out of the woodwork from all over the world, and from, you know, the being fans of my old band and stuff. So I'm really excited, and I feel like I'm finally ready. Like, I'm ready to do this, you know? And because I think, you know, when you play as a duo, in a duo for so long, and you're just used to having someone else on stage supporting you, you know, you just get used to that. And then there's a period of time where you have to really be comfortable. Like, I'm just going to really do this on my own. And yeah, it's just going to be me. And it took a while for me to come around and for me to be okay with that. So, and I'm there, finally.
Well, it's worth it, you know, pays off.
It is worth it. It is worth it. And I think 2013 is going to be a really interesting year.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have no idea about what I'm doing. And,
right.
And they're going to start to find out. And it's going to be interesting. I'm excited. I have a feeling about it all. And I think that this is...
But you're projecting that. I got to say, without even saying, because I was totally like, you know, I left that thing the other night, like, how do I, like, I wonder if she'll be on this show. And so I went to your website and I saw that and I was like, well, fuck, she's making a record. Like, come over. Let's
yeah.
talk.
Yeah.
Because cool. there's also some, I noticed, I mean, we've never really talked this much.
No, it's
and,
very
I mean,
nice,
by the way.
That's
another great thing about having this show for me is that I really like, I mean, there's people that I've had the same kind of relationship I've had with you since I met you, but literally for 20 fucking years. Like,
right.
Oh, hey, how's it going? Pretty good. You got that thing? Oh, yeah. When are you playing? Wednesday. So, and then that's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I just noticed, I feel like you're different. When you said that you went through that chain, I was like, something is different about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I can't put my finger on it, but it really is, and I feel it inside of me, and I feel it's really just about trusting yourself and knowing that you already have everything you need to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And trusting that.
Yeah.
That idea.
Yeah.
You know, and really kind of, you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, kind of falling in love with yourself as opposed to, you know, having a man in your life or anything like that.
Girl, just, I know. No.
Just really like concentrating on
you know,
you know, happiness on a daily basis, like with yourself, and you know, getting up in the morning by yourself and going to bed at night by yourself. And
I've experienced this the whole last year.
Really?
Yeah.
It's at times not great.
No.
And a lot of times it's not great, actually. Yeah. But it's been really revealing. Let's just say that much.
Yeah.
You know, and it's important. It's an important time to go through. And, you know, it's also, you know, it's almost Christmas time and I'm going home for the holidays. Home. I haven't been there in a whole year to Winnipeg. And I'm getting really personal. Is that okay?
No, that's what I've been trying to get. Okay. I thought this is going to be a mystery.
No.
I'm fucking with you.
But, you know, I have a whole big family of cousins and who are all either getting married or, you know, they have their normal lives and they're all my age. And I just think, man, you know, I'm not even close to that, you know. But I have, you know, I have what I have and of course I wouldn't trade it for the world. But you do really kind of make a sacrifice.
You do.
And I sometimes think, you know, how in the heck am I going to even be able to keep a boyfriend? How are they going to, it's a tall order, you know, someone's going to be on the road all the time, you know, all that kind of thing. But
guys seem to have a harder time than girls do.
I really think they do. And there is this like duality that I have with my life where I have always done what I've done and I've been on the road, but I crave that
home
like
life.
Nest.
Yeah.
You know, I really crave it and I want to start that soon. So
is that just from playing with the Trishas though? The baby making machine?
That's really funny you mentioned that.
I'm surprised you didn't get pregnant just playing with them.
I know. Well, they say there's something in the water, right? God, it's funny. Well, maybe it is a little bit of that, but you know, I think it's just the internal clock. I'm going to be 30 next year and I'm also a Cancer, you know, that's my sign and they're just all about the home life.
Yeah.
So I have the kind of two lives, you know, and when you're on the road so much, you almost, when you get home sometimes, you're just like, what
it's
am
hard.
I supposed to do
yeah.
now?
Yeah.
You know, and I really want to find that balance. I think every touring musician is trying to find that. And I
don't. Everybody is, yeah.
Yeah, everybody is. And I don't know if anybody has been successful at that. And if they have, they should get in contact with me and tell me how they did that. But there's like, you know, there's always a week or two where you get off the road and you just.
Oh, that's,
like,
I think
whoa.
That's going to happen no matter what. I used to be married so. And I was in a band and we would go out, you know, gone for 3 months and you come home and you, it's kind of like, you don't know who your friends are and you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And there's, it seems like there's nothing to do because every hour isn't dictated. Cause that's, I think that's the thing is that there's almost
every
like
hour
this
is dictated,
savant,
yeah.
you know, oh, I've got to get up and I've got to leave by this time. So I'll be in the van for this many hours and then I'll get out and then I'll load in and then probably go grab a coffee, come back and do this, eat some dinner, whatever. You know what I mean? There's like
totally.
Everything's very regimented
mm-hmm.
it's like, and it makes it easy to live. And then all of a sudden you come home, you got nothing to do. There's a great song about it by Styx.
Okay.
Called Too Much Time on My Hands.
Nice. I'll look into that
one. Yeah, it's about how terrible it is when you come home.
Yeah. You know, and then you kind of have to just, I'm starting to learn in the last few months, just, you know, okay, well, I'm going to just set up my instruments and spend that time, you know, practicing. The time is a gift. And that's just it. Being a tour musician, you have that off time where you can just hole up and play. You know?
Yeah, it's awesome.
And then, you know, try to have a social life too, but.
Yeah. This is becoming part of my social life. I think that my social life is I go and play gigs, so I hang out with those guys. And then every couple of days, somebody comes over and talks to me for an hour and a half.
Yeah. But it's, so there's that whole duality. And I feel like I'm kind of, you know, going home, I'm going to bring this back around to what I was talking about, going home and you know, nobody knows about the kind of life that I live and I'm going to have to explain it to them and I'm going to have to tell them, no, I don't have a husband or a boyfriend or anything. And, you know, but I have my art and I'm going to have to try to explain this to
Well, you
my,
can have your record with
family.
You, right? Is it done?
It's not
it,
done
oh, it's
yet.
Not, but
so
you've got some rough mixes.
I do have rough mixes, well, like, which I will not play for anybody. But
really?
You know, no, I also keep that very close.
I like that.
I don't want anybody's opinion to color my time. Because I have I have this idea of how it is and how much I love it right now, and I don't want anybody to. Can I swear on here?
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to fuck with that, yeah. basically. So, and some people just throw out their opinions like anything. And I don't want someone to say, oh, well, that's too loud on there. Like, yeah, it's a rough mix, dude. You know, just kind of don't want any of that, because I want to keep that feeling going as long as possible. That, like, afterglow of making a record.
That's awesome. Yeah, before the judgment comes.
Yeah.
And ruins everything. And then it doesn't sell.
Yeah, man. There'll be enough time. Exactly. Enough time of people telling you, oh, you should have done this with that song or that and this. So
what are you going to do between now and when it comes out? The Trishas are taking a break?
Well, they're almost done the break. We're going to go back on the road in the new year.
Are you guys going to the Steamboat Springs?
We are going to the Steamboat. Yes. Yes. We are.
I love it up there.
I'm not sure what I'm going to think about it all. I don't ski. I'm a prairie girl.
I didn't ski last time.
Okay.
Because I got scared. Like, what if I fall down?
I know, right? What if you fall down? I also, I'm also not, as much as, like, I shouldn't say this out loud, but I don't care. I'm not a big fan of that scene of music. So, I'm going to.
It's sort of what you would call the red dirt. That's what that's called, right?
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's super nice and great, but I'm just not a fan.
You know what I noticed? So. You're a little bit more on the ethereal. Maybe you, okay, Reckless Kelly would never make a record with Brian Eno, but you might.
Yes.
And that would, nice it, wouldn't, one. It wouldn't be weird.
And it wouldn't be weird, yeah.
Like, I mean, Lenoir would make sense, but like, you'd go like, oh, hey, further. I'm going to work with this weird guy. And they'd be like, oh, fuck, I bet that's going to be cool, Brandy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So as much as, you know, I respect it all. I don't necessarily find much inspiration from it. So,
I'm
not judging it or anything, but it's just my deal. It's just kind of
Do you know any of those guys?
I do. Everybody's so awesome.
Nice. I'd like to get some of those guys on the show, cuz I don't really know anything about, like, I don't ever even, you know, like when we went and played, we played a different place than everyone else was playing.
Right. But it should be fun. There's also what the other thing that I'm very excited about is a different festival at the end of January, which is also a skiing festival, which is something that I've co-founded with about five other songwriters. It's called the Red River Songwriters Festival in Red River, New Mexico.
With them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's a group of us, Drew Kennedy, Josh Grider, Susan Gibson, Kelly McQuee, Walt Wilkins, and Ray Wiley Hubbard's going to be there as well. But it happens at the end of January in Red River, New Mexico. And it's a little festival where we get together and play and, you know, play on each other's stuff. And there's different
kind of
shows,
like songwriting the round and people.
Yeah. And it's a little bit of a smaller scale, you know, but really, really intimate. So that's what's going on at the end of the month that I'm really excited about.
That sounds really cool.
And I just spent five days with all these people playing and singing, and it's cool because everybody has something different to offer.
Yeah.
That's what's special about it, you know.
Do people kind of lean on you? Are you like the badass player? Are you like the kind of take it, Brandy?
Sometimes. I'm not the greatest improviser, you know, in the world. I need to get better at that. But I'm taking some solos here and there. Some of the other guys are great at it too. But you know, what's cool is that there's like an intellectual songwriter, and there's like the country songwriter, and there's all these different. I'm kind of, they dubbed me the rocker.
See, that's what I think about this, kind of like there's a rocker thing to you.
Yeah, there is for sure.
Chrissy Hynde, something.
There's something. Once I get her? I'm not familiar with much of her stuff, but.
Really?
But yeah, there's a lot of stuff you'd be surprised that I don't know. It's lately how I discover music is my roommate will put on a record in our house. And if I end up liking it, I'll just play it every day for like 3 weeks.
What's the last one? What's the last record that you heard that blew your mind?
Sweetheart of the Rodeo by the Birds.
Oh, fuck. That's a fucking amazing record. That's like...
I know.
Rubber Soul by the Beatles.
Well, I know it's like
that. What about new music?
That's just it, though. You know, I don't... Sometimes you just don't get exposed to certain things, you know?
Right.
Until...
I like that, though. It's exciting.
I know it is. And the one before that was the Phosphorescent 2 Willie record, which I just fell in love with as well. So yeah, you know,
what about outside of, that genre of music? I'm not saying like, do you go see Deadmau5 when he comes to town, but do you even know who that is?
No.
That's I was wondering.
I don't know who that is.
He's a DJ that wears a giant mouse head that lights up. Okay. And everybody loves him.
Pictures. Wow.
Everybody loves him. And Skrillex and things like this. You're not there. What about being Canadian? Do you how do you feel about Carly Rae Jepsen?
I don't know who that is.
That's awesome. So weird. I'm a huge fan of her. And I actually, people get mad at me because I talk about that song with people too much on this show.
I'm mad. Well, they're going to get mad at you again, I guess. Yeah.
They are. They're going to go, see, nobody likes her. I like her. I like her song. The Go-Go's covered it at their show, and okay. I was impressed.
I'll look into her.
You're going to be mad at me.
Okay.
You're going to feel like I wasted your time. Although she is on the cover of Cosmo this month, and she looks great.
Okay.
She also has bangs.
Okay.
What about fashion?
Fashion.
Where are you at with fashion?
What about fashion? Well,
I mean, you are wearing a flannel shirt, and you have a rock and roll look.
Yes, I'm wearing a flannel shirt today. This is my trusty wool flannel. And fashion is interesting. You know, actually, I can talk about this for a
okay,
minute.
Good.
Because I have, you know, being in the Trishas for a year with a bunch of girls in a van, they have slowly but surely made me a lady this year, being in the band. And that means I bought my first pair of high heels. And I wore them on stage for the first time. Played a show in heels. Played lap steel with heels. It was kind of awesome. And just kind of, you know, they have, you know, I curl my hair sometimes for shows. Like, they've really influenced me. It's interesting. So I've always had a...
Did they actively do it, or you just kind of picked up on where they like, Randy, come here, go?
No, they didn't actively do it. I just kind of like, oh, okay. See how that's going. I like that. I'm going to try that out. Yeah. You know, so it's been cool. I feel like I'm finally becoming a woman in my late 20s and yeah, not a tomboy.
I think maybe that's a difference too that I've noticed.
Oh.
I noticed when I saw you the other night, there was a lot less of sort of a tomboy. There was mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's there's awesome. Nothing wrong with it.
Celebrate it.
I definitely it's been a cool thing, and I even have. I've worn lipstick at times this past year.
Yeah, the pictures on your website, you look beautiful.
Thank you.
And you're very pretty.
Thank you.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think for a long time I was also getting personal here. I think I was trying to hide, you know, you know, you want, as a woman player, you want someone to notice the playing first, not like your beauty or something like that. But... So I'm just saying, fuck all that, and I'm gonna
be
great as I can be in every way.
Badass. Yeah,
yeah. So it's interesting. It's just all about growing up. It's like I'm growing up finally, Johnny. I'm growing up.
I'm glad that I got to document it on my show. I'm glad that I got to be here for this transformation. I wish I would have interviewed you a year ago, and then we'd have them to compare and contrast.
Yeah. Oh God, you wouldn't have wanted to.
I didn't even
exactly,
ask you.
Exactly. You didn't want to.
I'm just joking. I didn't actively not want you to. I did though want to get you and one of the other Trishas on at during that ham day thing, but I'd gotten up so early I had to take a nap and I lost the day.
Yeah. That's awful.
Brandy Zidan, I hope you have a great Christmas in Canada with your family. When are you leaving?
Sunday.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's when I'm gonna go to Houston. But be careful out there on the plains of is it Manitoba?
Manitoba, yeah. I'll try not to get blown away.
Yeah, don't get blown away.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wind here today. Remind you of the plains of Manitoba.
Yeah, it's true, actually. It's true. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm packing up my winter jacket and my rabbit lined mittens and my long johns. Yeah.
Be safe up there. Are you gonna play when you're up there?
I am playing when I'm up there. I'm so excited. I haven't played in Winnipeg in so long. I'm playing the awesome one, my favorite venue that's been there for a long time. It's called Times Changed High and Lonesome Club. It's the roots Americana country place. And
cool.
I'm really looking forward to it, yeah. I have a blast. I'm going to see a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time. You can always go home, Johnny.
I'm going there. I'm going on January 2nd. Terrified. I'm going to such a completely different home than you, Miami.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm going to wear a bathing suit.
Completely opposite.
Yeah, got the speed of a bat.
Wow.
A tank top. Wow. Some loafers.
Wow.
Brandy, I hope that you have a great Christmas. Thank you so much for being on the show. And everyone, check out BrandyZidan.com. She built the site herself. It's good.
Thanks, Johnny.
Bye.
I am a master.
Right. Brandy Zidane. She's amazing. Be sure you check out her new album when it comes out and check her out playing. I don't know if she's played in Winnipeg yet when this comes out. And I hope that everyone had a very Merry Christmas. It's over. It's done. We're done with Christmas. I've still got a lingering cold. And I think it's allergies and because my eyes are puffy. I hate having puffy eyes. Hey, guys, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Like our Facebook page. And follow me on Twitter at Johnny Gowdy. Before we get into any more music, I just wanted to thank you guys for listening this year. It's been a great year for How Did I Get Here? We have a lot of fans. My phone's ringing. Uh-oh, that means I better go. Here's a little bit more Twilight Hotel. Happy New Year, you guys. Thank you for listening. Rock on. Let's get down.
Holding my heart hostage.